Welcome to the Wine and Spirit Education Trust From Still to Bar Gin podcast. My name's Will Lowe. I'm a spirits tutor at the Wine and Spirit Education Trust and also master distiller at the Cambridge Distillery where I produce gin. This podcast follows on from the Punch Room Tasting podcast you may have heard, where we covered The Botanist, Tanqueray 10 and Jensen's Old Tom Gin. And today I'm joined by Chris Power, head bartender at the Punch Room in the London edition. Chris, welcome.
Pleasure to be here, Will.
It's a pleasure to have you. Firstly, we'll start with a brief introduction as to what gin actually is. It's essentially a neutral-based spirit, somewhat like vodka, that has subsequently been flavoured with ingredients known as botanicals. For a gin to be called gin, the main flavour must come from juniper. Other flavours can be added as well, with the most commonly used being coriander seed, angelica root, and citrus peel. Juniper-flavoured spirits were originally a Dutch speciality, and they mainly came over to the UK with the ascension of William of Orange in 1689. Gin soon became a firm favourite across the British public, so much so that it led to problems in society across the country. For a dramatic illustration of this, it's worth looking up William Hogarth's picture, Gin Lane. The gin industry got back on track in the late 1700s when gin production was granted exclusively to large distillers. Traditionally, it was served with gingerbread as a warm drink, for example at public executions and other such enjoyable events. Tents would serve hot gin and gingerbread as a treat whilst people watched the grisly entertainment. By the early 20th century, gin had become known as the mixing spirit for cocktails. More recently, gin has enjoyed somewhat of a renaissance. The Cambridge Distillery has been no small part in this, and many other craft distillers up and down the country, and indeed around the world, are experimenting with different methods of production and provenance in their products. So, on to production. The base material for gin is essentially ethanol. This is a spirit made to a minimum strength of 96% ABV, and the origin of the base spirit can vary, from molasses to sugar, beet, or the various grains available. There are many different types of gin, all of which have juniper as the predominant flavour, but the method of achieving that flavour determines the different categories that we see. London Dry Gin is by far the most famous. By law, this is produced by redistilling the neutral spirit in a pot with juniper and other botanicals. Post-distillation, no other flavourings or sweetness can be added. At the other end of the scale, inexpensive gins can be made by adding flavouring to neutral spirit. These are known as cold compounded gins. Somewhat confusingly, distilled gins are a combination of both London dry gin and compounded gins, which is to say, most of the flavour is there through redistillation, but not all. So I'm here with Chris, and Chris has selected three different gins for us to look at in the previous podcast. We're going to take a little talk through them now. So, Chris, what did you choose for us and why?
So today I've selected three different styles of gin. I've got the Botanist gin, a lovely new expression of what a London dry style of gin can be. We also have Tanqueray 10, a classic London dry style. And we've got Jensen's, it's a new wave of Old Tom gin.
So starting with the Botanist then, what was it about that gin in particular that made you decide to bring it along today?
Well, I like the production techniques for first. One of the popular things these days in either spirit production or cocktail production is foraging. Mm-hmm. I know that the Botanist hand select a lot of their botanicals from the local area. So introducing new flavours to give you almost a taste of the region.
Right.
So it's more, I would say, maybe a regional gin in the London dry style. Tanqueray 10 is fantastic. It's one of the most well-known and most loved, I feel, London dry gins. One of the ones that's most called for by the consumer. What I love about Tanqueray is it's almost a new wave of Eastern style. We've got like white grapefruit in there, for example, as botanical, as well as licorice and angelica root, which are two very common roots. And its overall balance and body is something that I admire, both in a mixed drink, gin and tonic, martini. It's all very transferable. In terms of Old Tom, for myself as a cocktail bartender, Old Tom, in terms of cocktail history, played a massive part. If you think of the Tom Collins, for example, classic drink like a Martinez, drinks featured in the 19th century cocktail books. A lot of them were Old Tom before London Dry really made its way through. What we love about Jensen's is that it doesn't have that inherent sweetness that people would associate with a Old Tom style. So it's much drier, much aromatic, and yeah, can almost work in place of London Dry as well.
So if we talk through these one at a time then, when you're looking for a really good London Dry gin, what are the signatures that you look for?
Obviously, you're looking for it to be quite juniper-led, but right. also with a fresh citrusy notes. And you want a really good London Dry gin, you think of a really good London drink. You finish work 5 o'clock, you go for a gin and tonic. It's become very popular now. So I look for my London Dry to be more citrus-led, yeah. something really, really refreshing that's going to really hit the spot after a long day. The tonic obviously plays a big part in this as well. Mm. For me, for sure, fresh, citrusy.
So certainly there's more to gin than just juniper.
Well, of course, yeah. I'm a firm believer that it has always been and should always be more of a juniper-led spirit, especially these days with the botanicals that we're using. You can make so many styles of gin stand apart. They can still be juniper-led, but they can be London Dry or they can be a different type of distillation. However, you can go with grapefruit, you can go with kaffir, you can go with bergamot, you can go with yuzu. And there's so many wonderful different styles of citrus or different styles of spice that can be used to really make the difference.
And what about when we move outside of London Dry then? So we see these new flavoured gins coming through where people are adding flavours after distillation.
We can't talk about this without talking about Hendrick's, surely. It's exploded over the last 5 or so years. Mm. And it was, I would imagine, at the forefront of this sort of new revolution of, you know, taking that London Dry cut and then adding or introducing new botanicals or flavours after the first distillation. It's one of the best marketing, probably, of all time.
I don't think anyone could deny that. It's fabulous.
Can have a slice of cucumber with my gin. Of course, Hendrick's. Stepping away from Hendrick's into a different continent altogether, Whitley Neal. It's an interesting one I'm also quite fond of, South African gin. Again, using those dry, red, bushy, chalk-like South African botanicals, using red bush tea. I've been to South Africa before, I've visited, and for me, I close my eyes and I can taste South Africa in the gin, if that
Brilliant.
Makes sense. And it's the same with the botanist. You get all those local flavours, local produce, and that, again, sets the gin apart.
And do you use these distilled gins in the same way as you use London Dry gins in the bar?
It depends. My mark and what I tend to always judge a gin by is it good in a gin and tonic? Is it good in a martini? For me, the likes of Hendrick's is perfect in a gin and tonic. Wouldn't be my favourite in a martini. I still prefer that London Dry style in a martini. Just feel most of the time it stands up more. And when you dilute that down or mix that with vermouth, that you're still going to get the juniper, you're still going to get the citrus, it's still going to be fresh, clean and crisp. The thing with the likes of Hendrick's or Whitley Neal that I've touched on is they add fascinating complexity to mixed drinks. Because you're introducing, just by switching out the gin for a different style, you're introducing a completely different flavour profile. Even if you're doing a classic gin sour, just with lemon, sugar, it's going to be completely different.
And then, of course, the third gin that you selected for us today was the Old Tom gin.
Yeah.
Now, not everybody's aware of Old Tom of a category. Those who are tend to think of it simply as a London Dry gin with some sugar added. Clearly, from what we're seeing here, that's not the case.
No, well, Old Tom gin is a very old category. If you think of maybe the timeline of gin coming over from Holland, you've had the likes of Genever. And then when it came to London, Old Tom was born. And it was popularised quite a lot before London Dry became the beast that it is today. So yeah, Old Tom was inherently, it's still juniper-led spirit, but it was inherently sweeter. Again, perhaps to do with people's palates at the time or the methods of production or distillation. Maybe to mask certain unpleasant flavours, there was sugar added. But it was certainly very, very popular of the time. And Old Tom's had more of a renaissance recently, especially among craft cocktails and bartenders, in terms of seeking the authentic recipe or what a drink tasted like in the 19th century or in 1860s when Jerry Thomas released the Bartender's Guide and we had all these gin-based drinks calling for Old Tom. So it's a curiosity, and I believe it was a curiosity of Jensen's when they made this spirit to make it as authentic as possible. What they've done though is they've kept it very clean. It's not so sweet at all. And yeah, it is somewhere in between a London Dry and Old Tom for me. If you were to blind taste it, I don't think many people would go straight away Old Tom, which I find very unique. It's definitely a unique gin in the Old Tom category.
We've almost addressed the next question that I have for you in that part of the future of gin seems to be looking back at the history of
yeah.
gin and recreating these historic approaches. But we also see a lot of innovation in the category. How much longer can this last, do you think?
I think as long as people respect the roots and, you know, what gin is and what it's always been about, I think the sky's the limit. It doesn't seem like slowing down. Since I've moved to London especially, I've lost count of the amount of gin and tonics or martinis that I've made, or the amount of gins that have been brought to whichever bar I've worked in. No, we've got a new craft gin, you like to try it. It's almost every day. It can be a good and bad thing. I believe in parts the market's becoming slightly saturated with slightly, let's say, poorer products, but ones that don't have the heart of gin. They've been made quite quickly and maybe cheaply.
I can see you struggling around the elephant in the room here. I think I mean, we can all agree that you expressed it very nicely when you said, as long as you respect what gin is.
Yeah.
There are a lot of products now which have the word gin on the label, where clearly juniper is, if not even not dominant, then actually...
an afterthought almost.
Absolutely. And I would quite agree that, you know, as long as juniper is at the centre of it, then gin it remains.
I think there's so many great examples, something we've touched on. If you go back to The Botanist, it's such a great new wave style of gin, and it is London Dry and juniper focus, but the care and love that goes into making, from the purity of the water to the hand-picked ingredients, it's definitely a shining star of the new gin world. And there's tons more examples for me. And what I'm liking to see at the minute is there are those people who still care. There are people who are really interested in preserving the history and future of gin. As long as it's respected as a category and people really do their homework and look at the history, I think it can go on for as long as it can.
And following on from what you were saying about The Botanist expressing not just a world of botanicals, but in fact a more specific locale, the Cambridge Distillery even takes this one step further with its seasonal gins. So we're making gins there not only from botanicals grown within walking distance of the front door of the distillery, but also collected within a specific time frame. So produced 6 monthly, we do a spring, summer, and an autumn winter. Of course, the downside of this is the limited production, and does unfortunately mean that when they're gone, they're gone. But we're finding that people really enjoy those styles. And a final question for you then, with this sort of, I don't like to use the word explosion, it's a word that makes distillers very nervous, but with this huge increase in the number of distilleries, I think I'm right in saying there were 45 new distilleries licensed last year. Obviously, they'll all have a local appeal to their immediate audience. What is it for you that takes those gins out of their immediate local area and makes them able to perform on the national and international stage?
I think in the world we live in today, a lot of it is down to marketing, clever marketing strategies. And we touched on, for me, one of the most successful ones from many years ago was Hendrix, and a lot of people are following that. They're trying to find a USP, something that's going to set them apart. Whether it's necessarily 100% authentic or true or not is up for discussion. But for me, what really sets a gin apart is its heart, its love, it's a story, it's a history. And overall, if it tastes good in a gin and tonic and good in a martini, it's fine by me.
So when it comes to service, obviously gin is most commonly a mixed drink. And we've got the gin fizz, the martini, the brambles, gimlets, Negronis, the list goes on. What would be your favourite styles of gin for each sort of category of drink?
Again, I can be a little bit... my love for London Dry comes through quite a lot here, but at the same time, there's definite room. We talk about history and tradition, and Tom Collins for me was one that was always traditionally made with Old Tom, and one that I still like to make with Old Tom today. It's a fascinating story, anyhow, about the Tom Collins. Don't know if you know some of the rumours or tales behind the legend of the Tom Collins. It's like 1874, the Tom Collins hoax. It was quite an interesting one. Yeah, it almost went viral. So if it was today, it would be all over Facebook and YouTube, but it wasn't. So it was scattered amongst newspapers at the time. But it was a hoax where someone would come to the bar and ask for Tom Collins, and Tom Collins has been bad-mouthing you all around the town. Oh, what are you going to do? He's like, I'm immediately off to look for a Tom Collins. And he'd walk into the next bar and ask for a Tom Collins. And where's Tom Collins? He's been saying awfully disparaging things about me. And instead, he would just get a lovely, refreshing, tall drink served over the bar. Like, what's this? It's a Tom Collins. It's what you've been looking for. So, yeah, that's cool. But that was, again, in the 19th century when Old Tom Gin was popular, and I still like it today. It's fresh, it's crisp, especially using something that is less sweet like Jensen's, allows you to achieve that dry, citrusy, but yet long and fresh drink. In terms of a martini, I love London Dry. Number 3 is one of my favourites.
Right.
Really simple, really clean, only 6 botanicals, which doesn't overly complicate things, but it's very interesting. Again, an example about people associate London Dry with just being made in London, but in fact, number 3 is made in Schiedam in Holland. And it's really nice packaging as well. It's cool. Old school green Jennifer style bottle.
Mm.
And yeah, it's perfect for a gin and tonic and a martini. In terms of a Bramble, you can lead to something a little bit fruitier. Something, Monkey 47 is really interesting in the Bramble. Some people think, why do you want to mix that with Muir and blackberries and lemon? But because of the cranberries and lingonberries, and there was like musty flavors, adds like a nice twist to something fruity. Like a Bramble, gives it a more robust style and body. But yeah, I mean, the beautiful thing is about gin, you can switch out a gin in something like a martini and a Negroni and have a completely different style of drink. And as long as the gin's good, you're going to have a nice final product.
That is just what makes gin so versatile. All those botanicals beyond juniper just become a whole new flavour palette for you.
Yeah, exactly. And again, it depends. The good thing about gin, it always tends to have a noble sidekick, whether it's tonic or vermouth or Campari, you know. All these things lead to making a completely different style of drink. And if you look at most gin drinks, you can switch out one for the other and have something completely different and unique.
Wonderful. Chris, thanks ever so much for coming along and guiding us through this talk on gin.
Thanks very much for having me, Will.
Thanks. If you'd like to learn more about gin and any other spirits, courses are available through the WSET. Please visit wsetglobal.com for more information.